You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Over the last 11 years, JoJo Moyes has written 10 novels and one ebook, and along the way, she's won the Romantic Novel of the Year award twice. Her latest is The Girl You Left Behind, about a young couple who are separated during World War I. It's published by Pamela Dorman Books, an imprint of Viking, and I'm very pleased to welcome author JoJo Moyes to our show today. Hello.
Thank you for having me.
Now, actually, I said it's about a couple. Actually, it's the story is about two women, Sophie and Liv, one who's in France in 1916. The other is set in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And what connects these two heroines?
The two heroines are connected by a painting. The painting is of Sophie, painted by her artist husband in 1916 before he goes off to war. And the painting is important because it becomes the focus of an obsession by the German commandant who occupies her town. And it fires off what sets in place to be a catastrophic sequence of events for her. And it's also features because it's owned by Liv much later in the book. And the subject of restitution and what happened to Sophie becomes the focus of the rest of the book.
Edward, the painter, was influenced by Matisse. So
yeah.
Were you thinking about a painting? Did you actually have some kind of image in your mind?
I had a very clear image in my mind. I wish I was good enough to actually paint it, because it was so clear to me, the painting of Sophie, by the end of that book. But I loved that whole scene of Paris in the early part of the century and the kind of coming together of ideas of artists and writers. It was such a fervid pot of things going on. It was amazing.
Many French artists wound up in the French military during World War I.
Mm-hmm.
But why would Edouard have joined the army? There was no draft, was there?
I don't think there was a draft, no, but I think, you know, French people were particularly patriotic, and the Germans were such a threat at that point that everybody who could have joined would have joined.
And France lost a number of artists as a result. Apollinaire, the great poet, was shot during World War I. England also suffered greatly.
Oh, yeah, Wilfred Owen being one of the most famous ones. But I think the thing that surprised me when I was researching this book was I hadn't realized how much of France was actually occupied by Germans during that point. You know, we all know about the Western Front. What I didn't realize was how many civilians were living under German rule. And that was the thing that intrigued me, which was what would it be like to have people who were allowed to enter your house, take your belongings, dictate what you wore, what you did, what time you went out, what food you ate. It was kind of an extraordinary thing.
And where is this town located?
It's not a real town. I have to say that. I never write about real places if I can help it, because I found that if you write too accurately, you will always get something wrong, and then somebody will be more focused on the fact that you've put the post office in the wrong place than the actual narrative. So Saint-Péran is an imagined place, just south of Belgium, really. But it's based on lots of places I visited in northern France.
You made the German commander something of a sympathetic character.
Well, you know, the thing that I truly believe about human nature is that most people do not do the wrong thing deliberately. They do what they think is the right thing, even if it's for the wrong reasons. And the German commandant is really a product of his time and of his upbringing. And it's very easy to paint Germans in wartime as straightforward villains. And what I wanted for him was to be more of an enigmatic character so that the reader was not sure of his intentions.
Jean Renoir did the same thing with a character that Erich von Stroheim played in one of the great films, because actually that makes it more believable. A person being human instead of just being totally evil.
Absolutely. And then you're less sure of what's going to happen in the book, too.
Well, in this case, Sophie she has an inn, or at least a place where people come to eat. Yeah. The Germans don't take it over as their headquarters, as often was the case. But the commander does decide that he wants to have all of his meals there.
Yeah, he chooses to make the two sisters, Sophie and her sister, cook for them. And this causes all sorts of problems in an occupied town, because immediately in a place where rations are tight, there is the assumption that the girls may be getting something for nothing. And why would that be?
And they were getting better food. Everybody's starving in this town. They finally get a little bit of meat and some better things to eat. And so she's seen as sympathetic. The two sisters are seen as kind of sympathetic to the Germans.
Yes,
the kind of people who would have been accused of collaboration.
Exactly. And, you know, that's a problem that you come up against many times. If you read about any occupied town, the women are always particularly at risk. And also the women, some women do take advantage of, you know, their obvious situation to get more food and more resources. It's happened since the beginning of time.
And you include that in this book as well.
Yes, there is one character who you may think is working in that respect, but then you find out that she was actually doing something very different.
There are lots of stories about art that was stolen during the Second World War, but did it happen during World War One?
About restitution.
Art that was taken and then later there's a big fight over restitution.
It did, but the decimation of the north of France was such that far fewer records exist of what actually took place. And one of the things that intrigued me was, again, the lack of knowledge about what happened at this point. And it was only because I came across a book that was published by a very small publisher where a woman has made it her life's work to look at what happened to ordinary people during that time that I discovered how much was taken during that time.
What got you thinking about the German occupied area of France in 1916 as a setting for a romance novel?
Well, I guess I felt like I'd read an awful lot about the Second World War. And, you know, in England especially, we've had comedy series about occupied France. We've had books. And I don't know, I like to set myself a new challenge. And in fact, I was slightly concerned before I started this book that I've never written that far back in history before. And I was worried that I wouldn't be able to get under somebody's skin and understand their concerns. And actually, the more I read up and the more I looked at about this time, it was actually the easiest part of the book to write. It just came alive for me in a way that I hadn't expected.
You've written, as I mentioned earlier, 10 novels and an e-book and won a number of awards. Mm-hmm. But isn't this the first of your books to be published in the United States?
Me Before You was actually the biggest success I've had in the States. That's just gone into the New York Times bestseller list in paperback as well as hardback.
And so it's being made into a movie, isn't it?
It is. MGM have bought the rights, and I've just finished my work on the script. It's now hopefully going into production in the early part of next year.
Do you work on a number of different things at the same time? Because 10 novels in 11 years.
Yeah, I'm quite tired. I have to say, I've never had a year like this. I couldn't say no to the script because it was the opportunity of a lifetime, but I would not normally be working on a script at the same time as a book, no. This was just an opportunity I couldn't say no to.
So we have a number of different problems here. We have a woman whose husband is off in the war, who is being pressured by the German commander to have a relationship. Also, he loves this painting. Mm-hmm. And then we have another situation where in just a few years ago, I guess that was contemporary, you were thinking very much of contemporary times, Liv learns that her painting, this painting that she loves, may not really belong to her.
Yeah, I was an arts correspondent for the Independent newspaper for a couple of years, and one of the issues that was big when I was acting as correspondent was the issue of restitution. And one of the things that interests me as a writer is the grey areas. It's the fact that restitution should be a black and white issue, but often isn't, because it's not always a case of just directly returning something that has been stolen to someone who once lost it. The more time that passes, the more complicated the issue becomes. And especially when lawyers get involved, sometimes it becomes even more opaque.
It often goes through a number of different hands. And as we have seen with the things that Nazis and the Soviets, and in some cases British and American soldiers looted during World War II, by the time it comes into my possession, it's passed through a number of different hands, and I just bought it legally.
And in good faith, yeah. And I think one of the thing that really intrigued me was an old newspaper cutting that I found about an American young woman reporter who had been given one of the great stores of art to guard at the time of the liberation of Dachau. She'd been asked by an American leader to literally mind this warehouse full of stolen art. And as a thank you, she was given a Kranach at the end of that, where she was told she could pick something as a souvenir. That's how mad the time was. And so she picked this little Kranach of a cherub. And, you know, 40 years later, this comes to light.
Lucas Cranach said they are priceless paintings.
Absolutely. And I think she just probably looked at it and thought, what a beautiful little painting. And it was such an odd time that I don't think you would have blinked twice at, you know, being given a gift like that. From this vast warehouse, and nobody knew whether even the people who owned the artwork were even still alive, if you think about what they were seeing coming out of Dachau just down the road. And it became the subject of a court case and was returned to the family that had originally lost it. But it was such a clear image to me of this girl reporter sitting on a, you know, car, obviously knowing that the real story was going on elsewhere and being given this priceless work of art. It just, to me, that was something that I couldn't let go of.
I'm talking with Jojo Moyes, whose latest novel is The Girl You Left Behind. You were a journalist, as you said. Usually when journalists begin writing fiction, their work is inspired by what they saw as reporters. But you became a romance writer.
Yeah, well, I'm always slightly...
Were you doing the wedding columns?
No, I was. I covered the death of Diana. I covered the riots in Belfast, the handover of Hong Kong. I was hard news. But I bulk slightly at the term romance because I always feel that in England, at least, it suggests something that's kind of been dashed off. And what I try to do is have a story that has other issues going on, whether it be restitution or, in the case of Me Before You, the right to die, but has a love story at its heart. To me, nearly all great fiction has at its heart a love story anyway.
So did you give back the two Romantic Novel of the Year awards you won?
Oh, no, I was very grateful to get them. No, it's not that the awards themselves are worthless or even that romance books are. It's just we have a really strong image of a writer called Barbara Cartland. I don't know if you know of her
course.
Over
well,
here.
She's
where she
quite
lays there
here.
Exactly dictating her one romantic book a week, wearing a feather boa and kind of gaily dashing it off. And unfortunately, that seems to have coloured a lot of people's views of what women writing romantic fiction comprise. Yeah.
Well, you have won that award twice, which I don't think anybody else has.
I think one other person has since, yeah.
Well, what do you think are the necessary ingredients for a good literary romance?
To me, it's to do with not doing the expected.
So
you know,
go to World War One.
Not even that, but just not know who the... I mean, in a lot of romance fiction, I think you know who the heroine is going to end up with by page 40, and that bugs me. I hate lazy fiction.
The person she's always fighting with.
Exactly. And so I just try to introduce the unexpected. You know, in Me Before You, it's a love story. It's an unconsummated love story between a quadriplegic and his carer, which doesn't perhaps end in the way you might expect. In The Girl You Left Behind, there are two love stories going on, and it's one between a woman who doesn't see her husband for the vast bulk of the book, and in the other one, it's one whose husband has died. So it's a different kind of love story, I hope.
And must it always be women at the as the main characters?
No, not at all. I've written other books which has... I love writing in the male voice. Sometimes I find it easier than writing a modern female voice.
The reason I ask is I know you've been a judge for the Women's Prize for Fiction, formerly the Orange Prize.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we are very aware of the fact that despite the fact that there have been quite a few great female writers, they still do get kind of short shrift.
Yeah, I think the Women's Prize this year, you know, when you have heavyweights like Barbara Kingsolver, Hilary Mantel, A.M. Holmes, who eventually won it, I think it was very hard for anyone to suggest that those books did not just deserve a place on a shortlist for women's fiction, but they deserved a shortlist on a place, you know, of any fiction. They were all fantastic books. I think
Is it less of a struggle today?
I think it depends on who you talk to. I think women's fiction has had a great couple of years. And I'm even conscious that calling it women's fiction may be doing it a disservice, but I think fiction written by women has had a great couple of years. I think Hilary Mantel has done such a huge amount to raise the profile of just great writing.
George Eliot wasn't exactly a slouch.
No, but a huge number of people still think George Eliot was a man.
Well, you have a name that could be male or female. Jojo Moyes.
Well, most people, yeah, and I've often had people think I'm a Nigerian man, so, yeah.
Jojo Moyes' latest novel, The Girl You Left Behind, is published by Viking in the Pamela Dorman Books imprint. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much for having me.